council member Ben Kalos on the air. Ben, are you there?
I'm here.
I'm here, like, dealing with 1,000 machines. So, next up is one of which has to do with something I just announced, which is the Rent Guidelines Board.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on Housing Notebook.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. See, where you're coming from here on the Rent Guidelines Board, if you may, if you can, or if you'd like to.
Absolutely. The Rent Guidelines Board is this official body that many people don't know about, but they set the rent for nearly 1 million residents of New York City who live in rent, SROs, and other types of housing like that. And it's incredibly important that we make sure that those rents actually go down.
So this year, we want them to go down.
Yes, please.
We've been asking that for a while, actually. And the basis of that is some of them know, but not all do. And you're quite right that a lot of people do not know about the Rent Guidelines Board, do not know that these rent increases are not come from some unknown place in the stratosphere and just magically appearing on their so.
Absolutely.
Right. And over the last, how many years have we been having rent increases that are?
Every year, other than last year, when we won a historic rent freeze, or we can start pushing for a rent rollback to start to adjust all those times that they increased rent and inflation was negative. For the past 20 or so years, the Rent Guidelines Board has increased rents in a way that has outpaced. The Guidelines Board is only supposed to provide a rent increase for owners' expenses. It's called the PIOC. Nobody knows exactly what it is. The equation isn't transparent, but it's hard to imagine that owners' expenses are exceeding inflation.
For years, been pointing out that they don't open their books, that their guidelines have been going up at astonishing rates, and what happens? We get higher guidelines.
Absolutely, and I believe that in 2009, at the height of the recession, we saw an 8.5% increase, and that's just one example.
Right. It was astounding, actually. And even prior to that, because people have sort of pointed out that since 2008, the rents have gone up well above the what could possibly be the landlord's cost, and that their profits have risen steadily. But even before then, going way back into the 90s, or actually ever since the Rent Guidelines Board was founded, rents have been going up at a much higher rate than inflation would warrant and have guaranteed ever-increasing profits to landlords.
Sure. I can go into a little bit of the numbers. This is a good chance for listeners to get a cup of coffee. but it's called the Price Index of Operating Costs, the PIOC. Since 2005, it's overstated landlord costs by 11%. And over the past 20 years, the Rent Guidelines Board have outpaced the Consumer Price Index that's set by the federal government, by the Department of Labor, by 14%. So that means that if you're paying $500 a month for an apartment in 1994, it's now a minimum of $906 a month with an annual rent over $10,874. Following the inflation, the same unit would only be $786 a month or $1,438 less a year, which means more money in people's pockets.
Right, and also because inflation does affect other things, we're looking at a lot less money in people's pockets when the rent goes up like that.
Exactly. It's people having to choose between food and rent, between medication and rent. A lot of folks will chant at our rallies that when they pay their rent, there's not much left.
Right. But that doesn't seem to be an issue for the landlords. The issue for the landlords is, yeah, but you still have a couple dollars, and we want them. They'll say, but if they're still alive and they're still in their apartments, they must have a couple extra dollars lying around somewhere that they can get up off of to give us a higher rent.
And I think one of the things that we've seen is that a lot of landlords who have purchased rent-stabilized buildings have a profit motive to displace rent-stabilized tenants. And one of the results is that folks don't have anywhere to go. In homelessness in the city, we're at 58,000 people in our shelters, and that doesn't come from nowhere. It comes from the fact that people are being forced out of affordable housing. We've got 23,000 children who wake up in a shelter every morning and go to public school. We've got 17,000 of their family members in the shelter system. So that's about 40,000 people, just in families, many of whom are children. And when a family gets forced out of a rent-stabilized unit or other unit, that's where they end up. And we can and must do better.
Yes. There are studies have shown, I believe, that children who are made homeless are traumatized in a way that's only comparable to war. I have heard.
I think the deserve being forced from their home and made homeless, and we as a city should do more. And one thing we can do is make sure that the rents stay low so people can afford to live in the affordable housing that remains.
Right. And, of course, we know that part of the incentive to evict rent-stabilized tenants has to do with the fact that the laws are made up in Albany. And I know you have some feelings about the necessity of rent stabilization.
Absolutely. It's what's protecting folks. And the reason the law is set in Albany is because of a state law called the Erstat Law. And actually, on April 19th, there is a special election out on Long Island in the old seat of corrupt and indicted and convicted Senator Dean Skelos.
Oh, Dean.
And if we can replace that seat from Republican to Democrat, we might have a Democratic majority in the Senate and could repeal things like the Erstat Law so that the city could take control of its rent laws.
What we need to do is see how they can get involved in helping voter turnout and making sure that we get a Democratic senator elected from that district.
And they should just reach out to the campaign. Mm-hmm. And hop on out and help with getting and turning out the vote.
Good. Now, I understand that you, along with others, have introduced a couple of bills. Actually, it was last year that had to do with the dreaded tenant blacklist and the non-registration of rent-stabilized apartments in buildings that got tax breaks.
Absolutely. So I think one thing I do want to start with is how listeners can find out if they're in a rent-stabilized unit.
Mm-hmm.
So many of your listeners probably already know because their landlord might have told them, or they may have been in this unit going way back when. But if your building was built before 1974 and has six or more units, if your monthly rent is below $2,700, because once the rent exceeds that number, the unit can exit rent stabilization program through something called luxury decontrol, or if you're in a building that receives 421A or J51 tax credit that was built recently, specifically if you won a lottery to get that unit. So one of the bigger problems is people may move into a unit and not know, protected from being forced out of your unit or even from free market rent increases, and that's being done by the Rent Guidelines Board. So if somebody's interested in finding out whether they're rent stabilized, they can email rentinfo, one word, at nyshcr.org or call 718-739-6400. The reason this is important is because reporting by ProPublica found that owners of 15,000 buildings in New York City who had received over $100 million in property tax reduction for having affordable units had failed to register with the state, which means we should have around anywhere between 50,000 and 300,000 units of affordable housing that people might be paying more than they should. And in fact, the Associated Press today had an announcement from the state that said that they had recovered 50,000 improperly deregulated apartments in New York City and restored $2.25 million in overcharged rent.
I'm just wondering, and also, could you just repeat the email to write it down?
Rentinfo@nyshcr.org, rentishcr.org.
Great. So my question actually is, because I was looking at some of the information apartments, it seems to be that in the studies, those apartments are mostly in the new buildings that are going. There are, God knows how many apartments in older buildings that don't buildings, but are also not being registered. Is that the three? Would that be the one that the number that takes us up to 300,000?
I believe just the 300,000 is just with the 421A and J51s, but that is correct. The rent stabilized units that aren't being registered could be much larger than anyone imagines, which is why I introduced legislation that would require every single landlord in the city with multiple dwellings, more than four apartments in their building, if they have affordable housing, to register with the city.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't register with the city, they would have steep fines of $2,000 per unit per month, indexed to inflation. And once all those units were registered, we'd have an idea of where everything is. And if there was a vacancy, folks could actually apply for all the affordable housing in the city through one location. On top of that, because a lot of people have been having trouble with Housing Connect, where you might win the lottery for one of these affordable housing units that's being built in the new luxury buildings, only to find out that you make $5 too much. So the system would actually take your tax information and make sure it matches you to the right apartments, so we stop getting false positives and people who win the lottery only to find out they didn't.
I think it's brilliant, actually, considering that the state has our hands somewhat tied with regard to changing the nature of rent stabilization. But here, at least, you're able to bring something at the city level that has to do with enforcement and simply getting information out where it's needed.
It's actually modeled off of campaign finance. New York City has public matching so that small dollar donors have more power in elections.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways we did that was by setting up a system in the city in addition to the state. So when people run for office, they have to file with the state and the city, but in that way, the city can set additional requirements and work with folks to make sure we know where every single one of those dollars is coming from. And while I've got your listeners listening, anytime anyone asks you for political support, go to the CFB website, nyccfb.info, and check whether or not that person is taking money from real estate developers. And if they are, tell them, in exchange for your support, you want them to give back those dollars.
Thank you. That is good. But I love this bill that you brought. You've brought this one and the one with regard to the blacklist. It seems as if they were introduced quite, well, not a year seems like a long time in city politics.
The registration and application bill was introduced with Council Member Jemani Williams. That should be a name that folks recognize, because he is the chair of the Housing Committee.
Right, and it does resonate with a lot of our readers, our listeners.
And he is a huge champion, and it's called Introduction 1015, and it's already gotten a hearing. It got a hearing within, a month or two of being introduced, mainly because of the leadership of Chairman Jemani Williams. And so as part of the mandatory inclusionary housing and zoning inequality and affordability, we are requiring that HPD, the Housing Preservation and Development Agency, must create a tracking system. And so we're hoping that we are able to negotiate and pass Introduction 1015 soon, so that whether it's mandatory inclusionary housing or rent-stabilized units or FORC of all the affordable housing in the city that we are paying for with our tax dollars, these are not giveaways from developers.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one of your listeners is paying for it. Aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And making sure that we have that list, that we're holding the landlords accountable, and making sure that any one of your listeners who may not be in rent-stabilized housing can get into rent-stabilized housing as part of one of these lotteries or waiting lists.
Right, which lately has seemed all but impossible. So then the other one, we just have a few minutes, but the blacklist one, the blacklist has been very confusing, actually. It seemed very straightforward when the housing court was selling names, addresses, all the information, and they said, oh, no, we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to sell something different, like the case record number. And so when we're on our hotline, we have to tell people you do run the risk of being on a blacklist if you're taken to court by your landlord, even if you win, and even if the case is thrown out of court, even though they claimed to have made a change. So what would your bill do to really put in – and it prevents people from withholding rent when they have – when they ought to be able to withhold rent, when they're not getting what they're paying for. So what would your bill do?
This legislation builds on work by State Senator Liz Krueger and Assemblymember Danny O'Donnell, just as you said, to convince the courts to stop selling our case files to landlords. And so we've introduced legislation with Councilmember Rory Lantzman, Alan Mizell, and Mark Levine, and this would say that if somebody puts you on a blacklist, that would be a human rights violation, because anyone should be able to go to court without having that used against them. So a lot of the time what happens is if you go to court, even if you are the one bringing the landlord to court, the fact that you're in housing court is used against you. It gets added by tenant data companies like CoreLogic, SafeRent, TransUnion Rental Screening Solution, and ALM, and they sell it as part of a credit report to landlords who use that to screen. So it's one of those situations where you may have a bad landlord and you may want to get out, but just because of the fact that you've been in housing court, it means you're not going to be able to get in anywhere else. And the larger problem with that is even if you can afford to find a new place to live, if none of the landlords will rent to you because of the fact that you are in housing court, then that just means you end up with those 23,000 children, 17,000 mm-hmm. family members, and 12,000 single adults
mm-hmm.
Who are in our shelter system because they don't have anywhere they can go.
So I love that. It's brilliant that you have made it a human rights issue, because essentially it is punishing people for exercising their right to, for example, withhold payment for a service they're not getting, or to be in court, to have their day in court.
One of the other big important pieces of this is very few people can afford a lawyer. But when it's a human rights violation, you can make a complaint to the Commission on Human Rights at the city. The city, pays for an investigator. The city, pays for an attorney. And everything happens without the tenant really having to do much other than file the complaint and show up for questioning or a hearing so that they can win their case and get paid.
Great. That is great. Well, I just want to do a brief station identification. You are tuned to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City and WBAI.org on the web, where you can join us and become a WBAI buddy. Please do that. And I have on the line Councilmember Ben Kalos. You are on the Upper East Side, if I'm not mistaken, Upper East Side and some other neighborhoods?
I represent the Upper East Side, East Harlem, East Midtown, and Roosevelt Island. And I just wanted to mention that every year the Rent Guidelines Board has to vote on what to do with rents. They can vote to increase it, as they have almost every year other than last year.
Well, last year they did vote to increase it for a 2-year lease.
That's correct. But they did do a rent freeze on the 1 year, And this year we're fighting for a rollback. And the way that works is I need everyone who's listening and anyone you know to come out to hearings and make your voice heard and explain why there should be a rollback. And you can keep up with what's happening by signing on at benkalos.com to keep updates. Or better yet, you can join the Metropolitan Council on Housing, which does this show, at metcouncilonhousing.org. You can become a member, you can support the organization, and you can get updates on when and where you need to be to make your voice heard and get your rent lowered.
Well, thank you so much, Ben, for the plug. And thank you so much for being on the air with us.
My pleasure. And last but not least, elected officials sometimes do the right thing, but they usually do the right thing when the people make their voices heard. And even when we do the right thing, it works much better when we act with the people. So everyone listening, I need you to make your voice heard. Come out to the Rent Guidelines Board hearings and make sure that they hear the voices of the people of the city of New York. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. Have a lovely evening. Okay, we have just heard from Councilmember Ben Kalos, who is definitely fighting the good fight. His constituents are some lucky people.